Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. We hope by now that the faces on the show is now familiar to you. And today is one of many in the series in which we ask you, the individual, to take a good look at your own conscience, your own ethical standards, and to see whether you are proud of the person that you have become, whether there's something in your life that you would like to change, both internally and externally. And we ask that you look at your life and ask yourself simple questions as to whether what you have become is working for you. Today's topic is very interesting and somewhat controversial. It's entitled Prejudice and Preconceptions. Now, whether we'd like to admit it, all of us have the need to look at ourselves in that department. And to this end, we have invited Sister Denise to share with us her wisdom and spiritual take on the subject. Sister Denise has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahmakumaris World Spiritual University for several decades. And she brings to this show a wealth of wisdom and insight into this and many other subjects. Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us, and a very, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you, Magla.
Tell me, prejudice and preconception. It's not something that people easily admit to themselves, is it?
Well, no, because you always try to justify your particular approach. But let's just look at some of the most common prejudices, which are really worldwide, and also take a look at where they came from, because that also makes a difference. People are prejudiced according to skin color, where the darkest is considered the one that you don't like, and that everybody wants to be the palest, and so you get skin whitening creams to that end, so that it's even marketable. There's also prejudice against those who have not got formal education. There's prejudice against people who have their sexual orientation is not heterosexual, and there's prejudice against any kind of unusual sexual orientation or even physiology. People have unreasonable reactions, where the reaction is not commensurate with the provocation, and so it's hysterical. And you can't really explain to people that your reaction is hysterical, because they'll become more hysterical. And absolutely block any kind of rational. So it's hysterical, it's irrational. So it comes from somewhere that is pre-rational, and we need to take a look at what that is. There's also prejudice against children, young people, prejudice that the older you are, the better quality person you must be. There's prejudice against kindness. You know, if people are not harsh, they're considered too lenient. You know, leniency is weakness. If people try to control their anger and other negative emotions, they're considered soft. If people don't wish to participate in sort of institutionalized violence, they're considered not playing the game, or they are going against the proper way, and so they're somehow sabotaging the society. And then there's a whole load of justifications which indicate it's a kind of false logic, falsely proving that this particular attitude is right, like a means to an end. So the end is that we should remain in control at all times, and whatever we have to do to assure that, that becomes right, because things must not get out of control. So this is something that creates a lot of human suffering, that is not really borne out, especially not by the laws and ideas of spirituality. So it is something that contributes to human suffering, but unless we see the root of it, we can't really do anything about it. And if you look at the root of it, you find that it is in sacrosanct institutions and assumptions about what a human being is, what the human value is, and so on. So when you challenge it, you're going against these things that may not be challenged. That's a problem.
Yeah. So Denise, how does one begin to shift all of this? Because if you look at people and their prejudices, they hold them very close to their hearts, you know, and believe with 100% certainty that they're right in thinking and feeling this way, and don't you dare tell me otherwise. Okay? So how does one cause that to happen?
One thing is, I think that in your conversations with people, you try to find out where they stand in regard to certain things that are important to yourself. So you're introduced to somebody who has prejudices and preconceptions and social attitudes that are diametrically opposed to your own. This will create a social barrier. And you will have to be very formal, very careful, walk on eggshells, never touch the subject, in order to be able to have any kind of social intercourse with them. But then what you will also do is look for people who are like-minded, and this then creates a lot of divisions in society.
Mm. Okay, so you'll get the rare individual who will look at prejudices, and I find this quite often happening with children who grow up in a house where everyone else has a certain attitude, say for example against dark-skinned people, but this light-skinned child will know intrinsically that this is not on, okay? And yet they will then develop the courage to hit against it. Okay, how does one, when you indoctrinated into believing that this is the way it should be, how do you heal from that, and how do you reduce or minimize your own prejudices? For example, the people of light skin are better, more beautiful, more intelligent, deserve more from life than people who are, for example, the skin color.
I think that when you're growing up with all that indoctrination, at the same time, you're also observing the people who are giving you the indoctrination. These are the external moral authorities, your parents, your teachers, your religious leaders. And if you see those people having double standards, it invalidates and also makes their prejudice really visible, because it becomes part of the double standards. And then the child, who I think children have a fairly acutely developed conscience, which gets kind of crushed as they grow up, then the child has to see, you know, do I want to be like these people, or do I want to follow the voice of my conscience? And it's a very scary place to be in, especially when you're very young, because you're completely dependent on the adult context for your food, for your education, for your shelter, for your validity, for your social status and everything. So if you point the finger at it, they will pretty quickly come and rap you on the knuckles and say, don't you dare think, just do what we say. And then either you kill your conscience or you break your connection with those people. Either way, it's a trauma. And that is why it's so difficult.
Hmm. Okay, so if one reaches one's adult life and realizes that, you know, you now can make your own choices, and yet you've absorbed all of this prejudice into your life up until now, how does one make the shift inside? Because before you can start to make a shift on the outside, there has to be some internal
paradigm shift, as it were. What do you change inside from a spiritual perspective? Because you know, all men are equal story doesn't gel for a lot of people, okay? And it sounds, well, in this context, rather superficial. So where do you go to find the truth? Where?
A lot of people grow up in surroundings which are not prejudiced. That is to say, their immediate parents, relatives, educators, and even religious leaders. And yet the wider context is full of prejudice. So this is a very useful situation, because then that child will grow up where the whole thing is articulated, and the adults will provide the child with verification that yes, there are all these things going on, prejudice, preconception, and so on, but we adults can see it, we don't subscribe to it. And so then they really bring the child into their more enlightened awareness, and they actually provide the child with many tools for how to manage the wider context, which is very full of prejudice and preconception. And if you can grow up like that, then you are in a very good position.
Mm. Okay, Sister Denise, is external action required? And I'm linking this with our other topic of social conscience. Okay, is there a duty on one who's not prejudiced, to, if surrounded by other adults who are prejudiced, to try and help them see the light, as it were? Is there such a duty?
It may be a duty, or it may just be that you have friends who belong to categories that your family doesn't approve of. So what you're going to have to do is stand up for yourself. And if they say that you cannot bring this person home for tea, you say, well, I'm going to. And you will see that my friends are perfectly fine, and you are going to have to think about your prejudices. Now, that takes a lot of maturity and courage on the part of a young person. And they may not be able to do it at a very young age, but once they reach, you know, their teenagers or whatever, they have enough you know, strength and experience to be able to start doing that. And you have a lot of literature which takes up that subject. And whenever you get literature that takes up these taboo subjects, it comes out. And I think this is one of the reasons why very conventional, conservative societies dislike intellectuals, because an intellectual is in a way somebody who really looks at everything and looks and checks the coherence of the positions of the people around them, and will articulate either through film or through books or articles or whatever what is wrong, why it's wrong, and what would be better. And that disturbs.
Hmm. So, Denise, define preconception for us. We're familiar with the word prejudice, I mean, only too well, but most people are not familiar with the term preconception.
Conception, or being able to conceptualize an idea, is an intellectual function. What is a human being? It's a conception which has been handed down to you for a few generations. A human being as a body, could be male, could be female, comes in different colors and various characteristics, and then that will be taught. So the person has that preconception sort of indoctrinated, and they will operate on that basis. And they will not see anything wrong with it until something comes to let them know that that preconception has something wrong with it, doesn't work, you see. And then the individual will have to rethink. Or sometimes a person is told information that totally goes against these preconceptions. It happens quite a lot in science, especially medical science. And a friend of mine who's involved in the pharmaceutical industry has said that in general, the ideas about what illness is pretty much change totally every 30 years. And so the preconceptions of the previous 30 years will be sort of taken down and replaced by other conceptions that are considered very enlightened. And then as the years go by and different research shows other things, those enlightened ideas become preconceptions, and eventually new research shows that even they are wrong. You know, initially it was everything was bacteria, then it's a virus, now it's some other thing, you know. And so the sort of rules that everybody goes by is then factored into the education. Then people come into their medical practice with these preconceptions that if they're attentive, they will see that, hey, you know, my education has prepared me very badly for the reality of the world of hospitals and illness and so on. And so then either they get stuck in these fixed preconceptions and force them on their patients and their colleagues, or they start to research and take new information, and then they become outside the norm, so they will be penalized. But then they later become the people who bring in the new ideas. So it's a kind of a, this is the way things work.
Mm. Mr. Denise, there are millions of people across the globe who are the victims, as it were, of prejudice. Okay? And that creates a lot of trauma for the recipient. Okay, individually, family-wise, financially, it has a lot of negative ramifications. What is the answer to dealing with this? Because I've seen that it being a victim of prejudice can cause one to become violent. Okay, which I'm anticipating you'll say from a spiritual perspective is not the answer either. But the individual becomes so traumatized that you spread the pain, as it were. So how does somebody who is on the receiving end of these two aspects deal with it and still maintain their dignity? Yes, that is my question. How do you maintain your dignity in the face of prejudice?
When something happens to you because of prejudice, race prejudice, gender prejudice, whatever, it's a violation, it's a serious violation. And especially serious because the social norm condones it or encourages it. So you are violated by the instance, the individual, and the fact that society says it's okay for this person to do this wrong thing to you because you do not qualify as a human being. You're nothing. And so, shut up. Now, a person can react really violently to that, or in order to maintain dignity, we'll say, well, I can't do that because that really doesn't look good. What do I do with that force, with that energy? A lot of people turn it against themselves. When you turn it against yourself, you do not realize at all how much negative energy you're turning towards yourself. So you also, I think, anesthetize yourself in the same process. And this can create a numbness, or this creates a person who has to just shut down their feelings and then operate on the basis of some mask, which is the ego, where a person has to create a sort of a Fort Knox situation and keep their heart inside, and then everything is fake. And that is a terrible tragedy. But very difficult to heal from, because yes, it's difficult to bring to take down Fort Knox. It's a very, you know, strong place.
Oh, tell me about. Yes, so where to from there?
perhaps it's one of the things where you have to really do the original pain work. But to be a victim of prejudice, there's individual violation. There's the fact that the whole society is against you. There's the fact that you have internalized it and you're against yourself. So the amount of damage that's done is so vast that a human soul cannot endure it. That's that much. It would destroy the soul. So you have to do little by little over the course of at least one whole lifetime, maybe more.
Mr. Denise, why is a victim of prejudice so willing to buy prejudice that is being sold to him or her, as opposed to saying to yourself, that which he or she says or thinks about me is not true? Why do we buy that which is sold? Why aren't we more discerning?
Because we've been indoctrinated from birth to expect it. To your parents probably have bought it. Your grandparents bought it. Your great grandparents. You don't have any reference point for not buying it. So if you start saying, "I don't buy this," you are so isolated. So it takes so much strength and so much courage, which very few people have. But the reason why these prejudices have been challenged is because there have been individuals who are clear enough and strong enough and quantity wise enough to challenge it, and it takes a long time. There are historical periods where you can say that the negative karma, collective negative karma of a particular social attitude, reaches a critical point that provokes a reaction. And that reaction takes the form of a quantity of people who all say, "Excuse me, this is not right." It's not just one person that won't do, you just take them out. But when the quantity is enough, it's too many to take out. And so that starts to shift the balance. But it's fraught with collateral damage.
True. Yeah. Boof. So tell me, from a spiritual perspective, okay, how does one right the wrong? Whether you are one who has prejudices, or the prejudice. I don't know if there's vocabulary for this. The one who has prejudices and the one who's been prejudiced against. How do you, from a spiritual perspective, put that which has gone wrong right inside of you?
Well, I think a very important part of it is that the people who have prejudice have to meet on equal terms with people who have been victims of prejudice to have some discussions and be, you know, systematically explained why and how their attitude is wrong. This is a very, very important part, the whole part of the education process. And it's difficult because the society has many institutions that block that, you know. But it just has to gain momentum, it has to be written about, films made about, until enough people who claim ignorance or maybe are ignorant start to wake up and say, "Hey, wait a minute, it's the social conscience that gets awakened." Then you can start to do something about it. And that social conscience, in a significant number of people or a significant percentage of people in a society, has to be awake, and they get awakened by a tiny minority, and that tiny minority very often is killed or gotten rid of. But you know, you can get rid of the person who was bearing the idea, but you can't get rid of the idea. Mm. So the idea will come through other people and it will become powerful enough to create change. And what we have, I think, at the present time in the world is we have these really strong negative energies and really strong positive energies clashing. And so it's a very violent clash, which is very scary for people. So a lot of people are running away and putting their heads in the sand like ostriches and saying, oh, you know, I can't deal with this, it's nothing to do with me, somebody else can sort it out and then I'll pull out my head when it's all over, which is a very cowardly position, but many people will do that.
Mm. Okay. Unfortunately, Denise, we have come to the end of today's show. I hope that this topic is something that you could resonate with. This is a very painful subject. So if you're feeling some level of discomfort right now, would you believe it's actually a good thing? I hope that Sister Denise has given you some food for thought. She has given me some food for thought. And I hope wherever you may be on the prejudice scale, whether somebody who has prejudices or somebody who has been a victim of prejudice, whatever they may be, whether it's racial, economic, whatever it may be, I hope that you take a good look at yourself and know that you can heal from both. Okay? No one's actually pointing a finger at you, so you shouldn't be doing that yourself. So do not judge yourself too harshly for what you have become up until now, because you didn't know better. But please look at yourself and ask yourself, is this the way I want to be in the next 10 or 20 years, and is this the way I want to raise my children? And your own conscience, as Sister Denise said, will be a yardstick to measure your success in this area. So Sister Denise, thank you so much for talking about something that most of us wouldn't even dare broach, and I hope this episode has been of some value to you as far as your own life is concerned. Thank you and goodbye.